Virtual stud. Mechanics by day, lube job by night. Leather after midnight. Latin crotch rockets. Hunk hotel. Uncut glory. Leather intrusion case volume 4, down to the wire. Leather buddies. Transsexual prostitutes 1 and 2. Manhunt. Cockpit. Butt blazer. Buff and gay. Black men, white men. Private temptations. Halfway house studs. Guys who crave big cocks. Radio Drone. I'm Josh Hadley. I've never been famous, and I probably won't be. On the other hand, Cecil T. Cyborg is somewhat famous.
I'm internet famous.
Trust me, that means you're not famous then.
I'm kind of famous. People know. I had one guy who said that I'm a big deal.
Yeah, that was me, and I was just whispering sweet nothings to you.
Ooh. Tell it, baby.
and then we have the giggling Mimi over there. Peter never will be famous.
Oh, f*** you. You just wait. You just wait till I release my pop album a la Edward Furlong.
All you're gonna do is go see a movie, scream obscenities and vulgarities for 10 minutes and become a bajillionaire.
I hear that's how it works.
And gain like 800 pounds and a neck beard.
You need to really drop this whole introspective analyzation of movies thing. It's clearly not working. You need to just start saying things that make 12-year-olds go, hee, 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 and then you'll be rich.
This shit's hard, man.
You know what else is hard? Adam and Eve promos. Cecil?
Really?
You're the famous one.
Should I get more money for endorsing things? Like Kim Kardashian or something. If you go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code DROME, you get 10 free DVDs.
Six
free DVDs, a mystery gift, a gift for him, a gift for her, free U.S. shipping. And I think that's everything at adamandeve.com.
Because you don't know if it's going to be for him or her. It could be for both, or it could be for in-betweens.
Well, what if, like, I want a mystery gift for me? I don't want to get a, you know, like, butt plugs or something.
So a mystery gift for you.
No, that's a mystery gift for you. Not into that sort of thing.
No, but that sort of thing's into you.
Oh, my sides.
Just use the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com.
There you go.
What we're gonna talk about tonight is fame and how fleeting it is. This was prompted by the recent death of Amanda Peterson. Now, you might go, Amanda Peterson? Who the hell is Amanda Peterson? She did some TV in the 80s, and then she became kind of a superstar overnight for the 1987 movie Can't Buy Me Love. Then she went back and did some TV, and she was a really big deal for a while. Well, she recently died in Greeley, Colorado at age 43, penniless, a meth addict, with no career to speak of. What we're going to talk about tonight is what happens when you stop being famous? What happens after the fame? I mean, when you guys saw the Amanda Peterson thing, did you kind of go, oh, wow, I had totally forgotten about her? Or were you kind of like, what, she's not a thing anymore?
I kind of don't really know who she is. I mean, I don't even think I've seen Can't Buy Me Love or any of her TV work, but it's really, that is really tragic though. That happens to a lot of the overnight success kind of stars, or the a lot of the ones that start out super young, like Macaulay Culkin and stuff like that. So it's very, very tragic that you can go from, you know, living in the $1 million house and making the movies and doing the TV, and then you die penniless from a, you know, addicted to drugs, and you're not even like that old, like in your mid 40s. Like, it really is tragic what the world of Hollywood can do to a person.
Cecil, were you surprised when you saw the Amanda Peterson thing?
I don't know if surprised is really the right word. I was sad because I hadn't seen her in a while. And I mean, and there's, you know, when you watch as much stuff as I do, you kind of do see a lot of actresses come and go and a lot of actors come and go. And sometimes they will do a couple movies, they'll retire from the industry and will just kind of go off and have like a normal life. Some of them will just switch over to like produce or something and then end up having like really ridiculously successful careers. It's just they're not in front of the camera, so you don't really think about them. And then there's other ones like this where she just got involved with, you know, I guess the old bad crowd and wound up addicted to drugs and just kind of her whole life devolved into a mess. And it was sad because I don't want to say like a feel good movie, but it's one of those like, oh, I'm in a crappy mood. Hey, that's on. I'll watch that because, you know, it's funny and it's silly and it's it doesn't require a whole lot of brain power. And it's just an entertaining little movie. And she was like that quintessential 80s hot. She was like the perfect girl for that role. It's sad because now, like, in a way, the movie is a little bit tainted because now you watch it and it's like, aw, you're like, it's just a shame that she ended up like that. So I'm not really familiar with a lot of her other work, but I'm sad that that had to happen to her.
Because sometimes when an actor stops getting work, it's their own call. Other times it's not their call. The way that Todd Farmer put it is so perfect. Todd Farmer is the writer of Jason X and Drive Angry and My Bloody Valentine remake and a whole bunch of stuff that never got made. Was in Hollywood, they say you're only as good as your last film. He says, no, in Hollywood, it's you're only as good as your last hit film. He went from being an A-list go-to horror sci-fi writer to, after Drive Angry's flop, to literally being homeless and working at a call center for Toyota. Because he said, okay, Drive Angry made $5.1 million. And he said, compare that to Jason X in 2002, which only made $6.6 million and was considered a bomb. So not including inflation or the higher 3D ticket prices, Drive Angry killed his career. He said basically he had meetings set up before Drive Angry came out, because you're never as hot as right before your movie comes out. Mm-hmm. After Drive Angry came out and did nothing, all those meetings got rescheduled and never actually came to fruition. Every one of the scripts he was working on got passed on, and he literally had to get a job working in Toyota customer service for $8.50 an hour, and he was literally living in his car. So
I thought my life sucked right now.
So you can fall hard, and people don't realize it, which I think makes the ridiculous kind of the Hulk Hogan, like, well, that stuff that's come out about him, he's bitching how, oh my God, I just spent $2.3 million on my daughter's album. And you're like, do you realize how many people can live on what you spent on a vanity project for your daughter? I mean, he said it like $2.3 million was nothing.
Ugh.
You know, these people don't understand what real life is like anymore. And I think when you do have somebody like Todd Farmer who falls, and his story, you know, he did make it back, but his story is very crushing.
Yeah.
When you realize that most people think once you're famous, you're always famous.
Oh, no way.
Well, now it's a little different than it was in the old days, because you've got a lot of agents and stuff. And if you're smart, you can parlay that into a fairly successful career. Like if you get one real big hit movie, you can kind of ride that out a lot longer, and you'll make a lot more than you would have, and you'll make residuals on that and whatnot. Like there's a comedian who had a 5 second line in Spider-Man, and he's still getting residual credits or residual checks for it.
That's what I don't get.
Jim Norton?
It's Jim Norton.
I don't understand how people cannot live on residuals if things get really bad. Like, it's not much, but like Harlan Ellison wrote some Outer Limits episodes in 1964. Mm-hmm. He said to this day, every month he still gets a $30 to $40 residual check for a script he wrote over 50 years ago. You take that along with an entire career, you should be able to at least pay your rent on residuals alone, wouldn't you think? Yeah.
It was like the thing that came out recently with 50 Cent, with him being bankrupt. He made all that money off of vitamin water, and he pissed it all away. And I think that a lot of the people that are doing things that are making money, they don't understand that the money is going to stop at some point. So they keep spending, and then it's like, oh, wait a minute. There's no more money. You know,
Nicolas Cage.
No. Nicolas Cage, he knows what he's doing. He's from what I've heard, he's addicted to gambling. So he keeps like pissing his money away that way. So I think that it's not a matter of he's just spending, you know, willy nilly. He just is spending beyond his means because he can't control it, because he knows that, if things get bad, I'll just go do Left Behind and a whole bunch of direct-to-video movies and, you know, get the money back. And, he also bought a whole ton of weird shit for his house.
He bought, his wife said, his ex-wife, almost $1 million worth of comic books in 1 year.
Well, I mean, when he was hot, dude, he was one of the guys getting like $20 million a film. You know, $1 million on comics, I mean, yeah, that's a lot of money to you or I, but if you just made, you know, a $20 million film, or you just got paid $20 million, well, that's, you know, but you still have 19 to go.
These people want to continue living a Hollywood lifestyle. For instance, like, did you guys hear about what happened with Brendan Fraser? How he's claiming, this is his word, he's flat broke. He still has a net worth of $25 million. And you should see his expenses. Alimony, $50,000 a month. Mortgage, $5,000. Property tax, $6,000. Income tax, $34,000. Child support, $25,000. Gardening, $5,000. Various insurances, $5,000. Family support and gifts, $5,000. Staffing, $3,000.
Oh
now, look at this. He has a live-in staff, and he's bitching that he's broke because he's only got $25 million left. F*** Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser, indeed, and not even just for that, but because just Brendan Fraser, the guy stinks anyway.
So these people want to continue living a Hollywood lifestyle after they stop being bankable names. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the fame, they lose the fame because it's their fault, you know, drugs, or they're difficult, or they have a whole string of bombs and they made a bunch of bad, bad career decisions all at one time. And sometimes it's not their fault. Sometimes it's in something that they had nothing to do with. Which are the more tragic, the ones who do it to themselves or the ones where just they stop calling? You know, Hollywood just stops calling.
I think when they do it, when Hollywood stops calling, it's definitely more tragic because they don't really have anything to do with that. I don't think Michael Jai White, I don't think, is by any means broke or like, you know, teetering on the edge of homelessness or anything. Like, I think the guy's doing good. He trains martial arts and does like a direct-to-video movie here and there. But he is one of those guys that I really feel like has awesome potential to be a much bigger action star. He was really good in Spawn. He was, even if the Universal Soldier movie he was in wasn't that great, he was a really damn good villain in it. Made that movie, I feel, a lot more watchable than it should have been, yet Hollywood really doesn't call the guy very much. And it's even sadder after how fucking good Black Dynamite was, and that should have made him.
Come on, am I the only one that remembers Michael Jai White when he was back on NYPD Blue?
I remember Michael Jai White from Toxic Avenger 2.
I remember Michael Jai White from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
Of course you do. It doesn't matter how famous you are or how much of an impact you had on pop culture. Either of you ever read William S. Burroughs' Naked Lunch?
No.
No, but I saw the movie, and apparently it's much different.
Well, if you've ever read the book, there's no possible way they could have adapted it into a movie. The movie is sort of some parts of the book along with a kind of fictionalized version of Burroughs' life, kind of made as one. William S. Burroughs wrote Naked Lunch in 1959, and it changed pop culture completely. William S. Burroughs died penniless, eating two meals a day in a little shack that he was renting for $100 a month. How is that the right way for William S. Burroughs to go down? And then when he finally, a couple of years before he died, finally had an opportunity to make some money. Remember those Nike commercials he made in the 90s?
I didn't know he made Nike commercials.
Yeah, he did.
Hey, I'm talking to you. The purpose of technology is not to confuse the brain, but to serve the body. To make life easier. To make anything possible. It's the coming of the new technology. For the purpose of technology is not to confuse the brain, but to serve the body.
He was called a sellout for that. How dare really? William Burroughs, writer of Naked Lunch and almost the inventor of the modern counterculture, how could he shill for Nike? Because he was flat broke. He had nothing.
He was actually broke, not Brendan Fraser broke.
Right. I hate when I see people like Brendan Fraser claiming how tough their life is when Hollywood forgot him. Then you look at like William Burroughs.
Yeah.
Literally dying penniless, alone, and sick.
Or even like H.P. Lovecraft, like during his time, he really wasn't appreciated. Like hardly anybody actually read his work, and he didn't really make a lot of money. It wasn't until like way later when authors like Stephen King and he discovered his work and people rediscovered his stuff. And then he became this whole big pop culture phenomenon with the whole Cthulhu mythos and all the references and stuff like Dungeons and Dragons and Warcraft and whatnot. But yet he's never going to really see the impact that his work has made on the world as such a huge thing in horror and sci-fi because the dude died penniless. Like his work wasn't appreciated in his time. And that's definitely the sadder side of it. I don't really feel all that sorry for celebrities that like to completely indulge in all the drugs and live as expensively as they absolutely can. And then when they crash and burn, it's like, well, hey, fuck you. You did that to yourself. Way to go, Edward Furlong. Good on you for punching Monica Keena in the eye.
The ones I'm thinking of are Christian Slater and Val Kilmer. They had two of the most spectacular falls from graces that there were. Well, okay, maybe one other, two others. Jean-Claude Van Damme and Steven Seagal had pretty spectacular fall from graces too.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, Seagal was pretty much like because of the divorce. And I still feel bad about it. Like Van Damme, I don't.
But Seagal also had a string of bombs at the same time too.
Yeah.
But I still feel bad about Van Damme. Because he's consistently been making a lot of really good direct-to-video movies. Like he's
these are being the best. I think his are the best, honestly, of the direct-to-video stuff.
Van Damme and Seagal had a weird career path after they left. They had the exact opposite career path after they left mainstream movies. Seagal got lazier, fatter, and his movies got worse. Van Damme got more in shape, learned how to be a better actor, and his movies got better.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of telling, but like Van Damme, his fall, I do blame him. He admits he was a cokehead. He doesn't remember shooting Street Fighter. He Holy was so shit. Coked up at the time. He doesn't remember shooting some of his movies. So I can't really blame people for claiming you're really hard to work with when you're coked out of your mind. You do that to yourself.
It's really sad what happened with Van Damme. To me, a lot sadder than Steven Seagal, because I don't know, Van Damme really... You could see so much, like the guy had not only this great action presence, but just a really good looking guy in great shape, a lot of energy, had the cool foreign appeal about him. He was almost like an aesthetically better looking version of Schwarzenegger, pretty much. Like really just a total, all the girls were going crazy about the guy. He was on the same level of guys like Swayze. And he did. He absolutely that up by just getting coked out of his mind, and the guy had kids, and just I'm glad that he's doing better now, and that the movies he's putting out have been just consistently awesome. I just saw Pound of Flesh last month, and that one kicked a lot of ass. But he's one of those guys that I wish could have stayed as an actual, you know, blockbuster action star, because he should have. He deserved to do it, and he fucked that up.
So, and sometimes we never find out exactly what happened. Look at like Stephen Jeffries. Stephen Jeffries, most people will know as Evil Ed from Fright Night, but he had a career outside of that. He was almost nominated for an Oscar for Heaven Help Us. He was also in like the comedy Fraternity Vacation, did a Twilight Zone episode, did the Christopher Walken film At Close Range. He was in Amazing Stories. He was in the 976 Evil movies. He was in the Michael Paré, very underrated movie, Moon 44. Then there's a 3-year gap, and he's a hardcore gay porn star after that. Literally, he goes from Moon 44 to Virtual Stud, Mechanics by Day, Lube Job by Night, Leather After Midnight, Latin Crotch Rockets, Hunk Hotel, Uncut Glory, Leather Intrusion Case Volume 4, Down to the Wire, Leather Buddies, Transsexual Prostitutes 1 and 2, Manhunt, Cockpit, Butt Blazer, Buff and Gay, Black Men, White Men, Private Temptations, Halfway House Studs, Guys Who Crave Big Cocks, Gay Men in Uniform, Semen.
You seem a little too
day.
Enthusiastic about this.
But do you have Happy Scrappy Hero Pup?
There's no Happy Scrappy Hero Pup, no. Well, but no, you got to remember, you got to ask the question. What has to happen in your life and career from you to go from making mainstream released in theaters movies to making nothing for 3 to 4 years, and then all of a sudden you're a hardcore gay porn star? Something major has to happen in that interim, doesn't it?
Yeah, a lot of penis.
No, that happened after.
I don't know. You don't just start doing, like, it's not like, oh, well, I'm, you know, I really need money. I'm going to go here. You know, it's like, I think I'd get a job at McDonald's first, you know?
Yeah, same.
It's like, look, this sucks, but at least.
But it doesn't suck.
Doesn't hurt. Yeah, it doesn't suck. Yeah, it's not that bad. I mean, you know what? If you're gay, I'm sure it's wonderful. But I mean, you know, I can't see, you know, if that's where you want to go, fine. But, you know, no, thank you.
I guess the guy wanted to keep working in the entertainment industry and just nobody was calling. And he was like, well, fuck it. I guess I'll just try out gay porn for a while. I don't know.
Although I wonder nowadays nowadays with porn being so mainstream, is there any tales of any mainstream actress that ended up in porn and then made it back? Because I mean, there's been, the only thing I could think of, and it's not porn, it's just softcore, it was Alyssa Milano. Alyssa Milano was you know, popular with Who's the Boss and whatnot, and then she did a bunch of softcore movies, and then she came back with Charmed, and like now she's doing a bunch of like Lifetime TV shows and stuff. And so her career is like much, you know, I mean, it's good. She managed to kind of make back from that.
Once you've gone from mainstream to porn, there usually is no going back. Now, it is much easier to go from starting in porn to go to the mainstream. Someone like Ginger Lynn Allen and a whole bunch of other examples. It's that's not a business that goes both ways.
Sasha Grey is probably the most popular example of that. I mean, she's been in some fairly large movies. You know, yeah. I don't like the Entourage crap at all, but she, you know, I mean, that's kind of a big deal.
There is one example of, this is the only time in the history of Hollywood where an actress has been able to maintain a hardcore porn career simultaneous to a mainstream Hollywood career, and that's Ashlyn Gere. She'd literally be making like Cocksmokers 13, and then she'd go to the set of The X-Files. Then she'd go and make Butt Slammers 9, and then she'd go to the set of Space Above and Beyond, or The One, or Final Destination. She was making hardcore movies literally during the day, and making movies for Fox Entertainment at night.
Holy shit.
She'd be a hell of an actress.
Yeah.
She actually is quite good. You know, that was one of the things that made her stand out, is that she could pull off both. But usually you can't do one or the other. She is a perfect example of after the fame as well. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the mainstream fame or the porn fame, she quit completely and became a real estate agent in Texas.
Sounds like
so
she
doesn't
doing
act at all anymore. She sells houses.
She was just doing what she wanted to do, it sounds like. Like, she was able to be a mainstream actress, but at the same time, she more than likely enjoyed doing porn. So she did both of them and, you know, to her credit, made obviously a shitload of money doing both, which, you know, good on her, I think, because it sounds like she was doing exactly what she wanted to do with her life. And now she's selling houses, more than likely because she just wants to do it. It's just the next stage in her life. And it's I think it's really cool when actors do that.
Yeah, good for her, man, for being able to get out of it. I mean, it's a, unless you're in a bad position and you kind of have to do porn, then you kind of feel bad. But a lot of the new generation of porn, they're getting into it because they want to get into it. So if they get into it, they do it for however long, and then they are able to get out of it and move on with their life. Hey, you know, great. That's yeah. fantastic. You know, you came out of it not a junkie, not a complete mess. Fantastic.
What happens when you have major league superstars that fall so hard so fast that it's almost a shock to those of us who like the fans? Do you realize how fast Steve Guttenberg went from an A-list star to a who in only 3 years? He went from being an A-list star to being a has-been.
Good.
You don't like Officer Mahoney?
No. No, I don't.
What?
I can't wait till we do our Police Academy retrospective, Ben.
I can't stand Steve Guttenberg. Good. I'm glad his light diminished. That guy.
You know, you really have the Stonecutters to blame for that.
Who keeps Steve Guttenberg a star?
We do. We do. Right. But I mean, you know, you've got ones like that, or like Val Kilmer.
Mm-hmm.
Look how fast he fell. Christian Slater.
Oh, they're going to say fat.
The fat too.
Hey guys, remember me? I was Batman.
Well, you've also got like Christian Slater. I think Christian Slater, I've always liked him as an actor.
Me too.
But you look at what he's doing. He's kind of starting to rise up now. But look at the stuff he did in the early 2000s. It was like, really? Christian Slater's in this? I think he gleamed one too many cubes.
Oh my God. Oh,
I love that movie though.
So do I, but
he's like a BMX like rad kid.
He's a skateboarder.
Okay, all right. Yeah,
because he was gonna get a brother's justice.
A brother's exactly. You beat me to it. That was the alternate title, was a brother's justice.
God, they both sound like they're like supposed to be gay pornos, like gleaming the cube.
That's There's a just skateboard so... term.
It's oh, term. Yeah, right. Okay.
It is.
You were never a skater, were you?
No, I wasn't.
That you can almost chart their career progression sometimes. You go, okay, they're in like four or five A-list movies, and then a direct-to-video film, and then a TV movie, then they're guest starring on a sitcom, then they're gone. It's usually, isn't it kind of sad when you can see their career sliding and there's usually no upswing?
Yeah, that's what I noticed with Val Kilmer for sure. And he was an actor I liked him a lot. I mean, say what you want about Batman Forever, I thought he made a good Batman.
And
he
was in a movie with Christian Slater too.
Yeah,
Mindhunters. Movie was terrible, but Christian Slater had a pretty glorious death.
Yeah,
it wasn't that bad. That was a Renny Harlin, like, you know, mystery kind of thing. I like Mindhunters fine.
That was terrible. Christian Slater's death is the only great thing about that.
with Val Kilmer and Christian Slater, I mean, I think Christian Slater definitely got the long end of the stick there, because at least his career has been building again, and he's still. I mean, they're usually DTV stuff, but he's consistently acting. Whereas Val Kilmer has not only not been in something for a long time, but he's clearly having like some serious health issues. Like the guy,
he has throat cancer.
Yeah, I'm not saying he looks bad because he's fat or anything, but he looks bad because the poor guy looks like he's fucking dying. It's really making me.
Yeah, well, he won't do anything about it.
Yeah,
though.
He found Christian Science. So God doesn't remove the tumor, then it's God's will.
Oh, come on, Iceman.
The Iceman went religious nutso. What about some of the more classic examples, like classic Star Trek? With the exception of Leonard Nimoy, all of the classic Star Trek crew basically were has-beens when it came to anything but Star Trek. It was so bad in the 70s that Shatner said he literally would take any role as long as the check cleared. He wouldn't even read the script before accepting it. It's okay, it comes with a guaranteed payday. I'll be there to shoot on Monday. That's why Shatner is in so many terrible movies in the mid to late 70s, because he was just desperate. He was willing to do anything prior to Star Trek, the motion picture revitalizing his career.
Kingdom of the Spiders is fantastic. I don't care what you say.
Yes. You know what? Dr. McCoy was better fighting giant rabbits. Because Dr. McCoy was in Night of the Lepus.
He was in Night of the Lepus. God. Kingdom of Spiders is freaking awesome.
Yes. You just like it because they're stomping on real spiders.
Oh, God. It's terrifying. You're trying to tell me that he didn't want to do Barbary Coast?
I'm thinking there's a whole lot he didn't want to do.
What was that one that Shatner did where he plays a serial killer?
Impulse.
Yes, that's
where
it.
He's a red leisure suit wearing... A red leisure suit wearing... Well, I can't call him a serial killer, but a multi-murderer. But you know, certain actors get that. Their career falls to the point where they'll take anything.
Well, no, he got hosed too because of that. Because what happened when Star Trek was in like season 3 or whatever, his wife divorced him, and she did she did future earnings. So when that happens, if you lose that gig, you still have to pay whatever. So like she was getting $1 million a year or whatever, which back then was huge. He got fired,
the show got canceled.
The show got canceled. He still had to pay that.
Fuck.
Or else he was going to go to jail. So I don't fault him for taking all these different, jobs just to be able to survive and to pay his leech of a wife or leech of an ex-wife.
At least as far as I can tell, Shatner's always been a decent guy, just working, whenever he can, and I never really heard stories about him being like difficult to work with or anything. He just went through.
Then you haven't read the right stories. Because
he was more difficult to work with in the past.
Yeah. I was going to say Shatner had two different eras, his pre and post Star Trek. When he was on Star Trek, remember, he was on top of the world. He was coming from Boris Karloff's Thriller, The Outer Limits, The Twilight Zone, then to Star Trek. And it was at that era he was an egomaniac by George Takei, Harlan Ellison, Gene L. Kuhn, Richard Matheson, everybody will back up. He was an egomaniac. It wasn't until he fell that he became humble. So he had to get physically humbled.
Well, sometimes that happens, you know?
Well, at least he didn't stay an asshole. Like, there are a lot of people that fall and are still egomaniac pieces of shit, like Steven Seagal, for instance.
Sometimes you get that. Sometimes you get the people who, I'm a movie star now, this is never going to end, let's buy a mansion.
Whereas some people sign the right contracts and get everything settled first.
Right. Like recently here in Wisconsin, Screech from Saved by the Bell beat up and stabbed a guy in a bar and is going to jail. And he's flat broke. And you're like,
what the fuck?
Well, he did a porno where he freaking gave the girl a dirty Sanchez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy's life is just more and more bizarre. He spent time in a Wisconsin jail for stabbing a guy in a bar fight. And he's flat broke. And you kind of got to wonder, with Saved by the Bell in syndication and on DVD, how can you be broke?
Because he was even in the next class of where he played the principal.
Of course you'd know that.
Well, of course, it's kind of my thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he was like the principal. So he had money coming from Saved by the Bell. He had money coming from the, Saved by the Bell, the next class or whatever. Like and its show is always on somewhere. Yeah. So, he's got to be getting a decent residual check. And the guy, there was sometime in the late 90s. There was like Oprah or something. They were having like a Saved by the Bell reunion back then. They were they were talking to everybody. They were taking questions. And, Tiffany Amber Thiessen was all excited and was answering questions. And then they went to each person. And then they finally got like questions to Screech.
Dustin Diamond. Say his name.
No, he's an ass. He's Screech. If he was a good guy, he'd be Dustin Diamond. He's an ass, so he's Screech. But exactly. He was such a dick to his fans that I was like, all right, this guy's got, a problem. He can't overcome the fact that he was like the nerd.
But he was like the most well-liked character. Like I always just knowing people who watch that show, everybody's favorite character usually seemed to be Screech. So what the f's up his ass?
No, I was all about Jesse. and then when Showgirls happened, it was one of the greatest days ever, ever, ever.
It must be weird not having anybody come on you. It's one of the best worst lines ever.
It's terrific. Hey, she was just at the 20th anniversary. They had a screening.
Everybody got AIDS and shit. You get certain actors that, not even actors, but directors, they get used to a certain style. They get used to a certain lifestyle. Like, I remember, like, Tobe Hooper, who I've shit on many a time on this show, deservedly so, I believe, he kind of got used to working on such high budgets that he doesn't seem comfortable unless he's spending a couple of $1 million. You know, or James Cameron. I mean, he's still famous, but you look at, like, the stuff he did with Roger Corman, and you look at the early Hemdale stuff, and then you look at the James Cameron of today, and you go, the James Cameron of today could not make a movie for $500,000 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
He could back in the Corman day. He just couldn't. What happened? What happened to this guy that used to be known on the set of Aliens? He was known to be so frugal that he would literally bitch about $10 over on the special effect budget.
And you know, he's a guy.
What happened
to
that guy?
I don't know. He got cozy with all the money. Yeah, just ended up getting complacent because you don't hear the same stories about him now than you hear. You know, during the filming of Terminator, Michael Biehn was just talking about how Cameron was, you know, he was revved up, ready to go, doing everything, holding the smoke machine, running to this, running to that. He even makes a quip like the only good thing is that, you know, James Cameron, at least as far as I know, can't act. So he can't put us all out of a job. So it's like he doesn't you can't really say that about him now, because just looking at Avatar compared to a movie like Terminator that had such a minimal budget.
Really, when you think about it, is shot like Battle Beyond the Stars and Galaxy of Terror, really.
Oh, absolutely. It's shot like
Corman film.
Yeah, it's very Corman-esque. And yet the budget, the tiny budget that film doesn't show. It feels like a huge movie. And that was the James Cameron of yesteryear. And nowadays, when you look at stuff like Avatar, it's like, no, this is not the same guy. This guy is, I don't know if I want to say lazy, but I guess he got complacent. Now he's got all the money and his movies are maybe more expensive looking, but it's almost the same thing with John Carpenter. He made better movies when he had lower budgets. Like if you compare Escape from New York to Escape from LA, to me, Escape from New York honestly feels like a bigger, more grand scale film, even though Escape from LA has like CG and a cleaner camera quality and shit like that. I don't know. Sometimes money or having more of it can really hinder a filmmaker's creativity, and it's really unfortunate that happens.
What about The Fall from Grace? And this is an example of a totally did it to himself, like Corey Haim. Corey Haim was, this is still in the VHS days, and that's important here. Corey Haim was such a junkie that at one point in the mid 90s, he was known to have a $6,000 a day heroin habit.
Wow.
And he would literally go into pawn shops, buy up all of the VHSs of the movies he had for $15-$20, autograph them, and then go sell them down the street because he was such a fiend and needed the money. How does someone like Corey Haim get that broke?
Yeah, because he was huge. Like that guy was like, he was a teen icon.
The Coreys was a thing.
He was he was part of the, you know, team of actors, like the certain memorable name of actors in the 80s that you just go, yeah, Corey Haim, that's one of the dudes that fucking ruled the 80s. And yet why do they do this to themselves? I don't understand.
Drugs are a hell of a drug.
Steal, you know, my line.
Drugs, I did steal your line.
What I had heard, I don't know if there's any truth to this, but he was engaged to Nicole Eggert, and when she broke it off, that's when he really like hit it hard. And like just went into turned into a complete just death spiral.
I don't understand how you can be that big and then be that broke.
Yeah, I mean, at least he kind of resurfaced. Unfortunately, he passed away. But in the later point in his life, it seemed like he was getting his life back on track. He was actually really good in the second Crank movie. I thought his character was hilarious. That the dude that works at the strip club with the mullet. Yeah, so he was kind of getting back up there, and then the poor guy died, and it seemed like it wasn't drug related either. He had like pneumonia or something. guys like Edward Furlong are even more, like, a lot more depressing, because Corey Haim, he died, but he kind of built his career back up. Where you have a guy like Furlong, who his first movie is Terminator 2. So the first thing he makes, he knocks it out of the fucking park, and he shows all this awesome potential. Then he makes movies like, what's that? The virtual reality
brain
game
scan.
One.
Brain scan.
Brain Scan was another awesome movie. And
no,
he was
it wasn't.
Just,
yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
The twist at the end is a chick sticking her finger up your butt right as you're about to come. No.
Yeah, well, maybe I like that. Maybe I like that, Josh. Oh, that dude's downward spiral is just seeing pictures of him is the most depressing part.
He kind of looks like if you photoshopped an image of 90s Edward Furlong to make it fat and then melted it.
He just looked like, I think he did so much drugs and drank so much at such a young age that he stopped growing. I think because his voice is still, man, his voice still sounds exactly like it did in Terminator 2. He's still like the same height. He just got fat. He just looks like a fat kid. And I think it's because he did just everything. Everything was done way, way, way fucking earlier than it should have ever been, to the point where it was worse than guys like Haim and Corey Feldman, and even maybe not even Macaulay Culkin. That's a fucking freak show right there. But with Furlong, because it's not even that he lost roles and it just had so much potential and really easily could have been such a big star, but he turned into one of the biggest pieces of shit in Hollywood too. Like the guy consistently, you know, beats up his wife and just always something in the news about him being
Christian
just a sack of
bit
shit.
A cop in the belly button.
Good.
Remember that?
At least that's kind of cool. That's the depressing, a lot more than what happened with Corey Haim, I think, because just that really is one of the true down horrible continuous downward spirals of Hollywood. Because
do you realize how much in 90s terms $6,000 a day in heroin is?
A lot.
That's a lot of heroin, Peter.
Yeah.
There's one other kind of after the fame. This one, I kind of think this is sleazy, where you made a couple of movies maybe in the 70s and 80s, and now you're just coasting on those and living off of the con scene. Those people that have not been in a new movie and have not had a job since, say, 1988, and their entire living is autographing VHSs, posters, and DVDs of their one or two big films. That, to me, is kind of sleazy, isn't it?
But no, it's not. Because it's not like they're going over to people's houses and taking the money out of their pockets. They're going to these cons and whatnot, and people coming to see them, and they're
paying.
But
isn't that the ultimate laziness? Yeah, no. I made that movie 22
you know what the
years
ultimate...
ago. Yeah, you guys still like it. $20.
No, you know what the ultimate laziness is? The ultimate laziness is not doing anything.
They don't do anything anymore. I mean, to me, it's just kind of, you're living off the past.
So?
You can't let your one or two big accomplishments go.
But some of these actors, like I think one of the people you're probably referencing to is, god damn it, and her name escapes me right now, but who's the lead chick from Nightmare on Elm Street?
Oh, Heather Langenkamp?
Yeah, like she didn't
No, Heather Langenkamp moved behind the scenes. She's a producer and does a lot of the costuming and makeup and that in a bunch of movies, like the Dawn of the Dead remake and stuff like that. So Heather Langenkamp might not be in front of the camera anymore, but she's still working.
There's also Mark Patton from Nightmare 2, who didn't do a lot of like movie stuff, but he seems like a genuinely cool dude, and I love Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, so I think it's great that he's still going to the conventions and actually interacting with his fan base and stuff. Like, I mean, some of these people, they don't do that many movies, and then they kind of, like, he disappeared to Mexico for like 30 years, and then kind of he resurfaced and embraced the whole Nightmare on Elm Street thing, and I'm glad that he did. I don't really see it as a sleazy thing. It's just kind of their way of, I guess, continuing to work, because it's like, why would you go off and get a 9-to-5 office job or go work, you know, with whatever, like a regular job, when you can still make money off of your career? Like, maybe it might seem a bit lazy and maybe it seems a bit sleazy, but it's like, wouldn't you rather do that? Like, wouldn't you rather show up, get a paycheck for showing up at a con rather than, you know, going off and, you know, working at some office or a call center or whatever. Like, I don't know. I would definitely choose to be, haven't done a movie in 20 years and is going to conventions. Though,
but isn't that the ultimate kind of, I used to be a big star, you know.
But who gives a shit? like what they're not hurt. It's they're not hurting anybody. They're not doing anything bad. They're not doing anything illegal. They're going somewhere where people want to see the
exactly.
Where,
they wouldn't.
Why wouldn't you go? Like, if I could go somewhere where people would be willing to pay to talk to me, are you fucking kidding me?
Obviously, yeah. Obviously, these people want to see them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be at the conventions. People are big fans of these actors. Whether they've done a movie in 30 years or not, people are paying to go see them. So that's, I don't know. It seems like a logical step to take in your career if that's what you're gonna do. I mean, people want to see you, so why not show up to the conventions? I mean, why the hell not?
Isn't it kind of exploiting the cult status of especially horror cons?
Not really.
Because, I mean, like, there are some actors like Tom Noonan. Tom Noonan never even realized that Monster Squad was a cult film. He was asked at the first con he ever went to in 2007. They asked him, at what point did you realize Monster Squad had a cult following? He said, 15 minutes ago. He had no clue. People, because you remember, the DVD is not out yet at this point, so you can only get it on VHS and Laserdisc. He's like, I had no concept that people are paying $40 for a VHS of this, and that they're willing to pay me $30 to autograph it. That's the ultimate in non-exploitation, I think. Tom Noonan always comes across to me in every interview as like he's a really cool dude, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with him, he's been like a consistently working actor, though, and he's a damn good one, too. Like, this is a, like, I could see why he maybe kind of forgot about Monster Squad, because
it bombed initially.
Well, the caliber of his acting ability, like, this is a guy who does, like, genuine movies. Like, well, not to say that Monster Squad isn't a genuine movie, but actual dramatically trained amazing actor who movies like that probably do escape from his mind and slip through his fingers, and he kind of forgets about them because he's constantly working, and he's always making like pretty big movies and starring as very memorable characters. So I can see how he would have that attitude, because like, oh, Monster Squad, I thought about that movie in like 20 years.
If he's going to start going to some cons and stuff, especially somebody of his caliber, that's awesome, because I think the cons are getting a little bit more not as niche. Like, you're starting to get people that are still making movies and whatnot and are showing up to these things. And now, granted, like, San Diego Comic-Con is getting freaking ridiculous because, you know, you're getting like A-listers there to like you know, to do panels and stuff. And I mean, and that's awesome, but it just makes it impossible to get into, because it's like, all right, well, if you don't live nearby there, all right, well, now you got to like fly out there and wait in line for 2 days and just to go see a trailer of a movie or something. But I kind of like that some actors like Noonan and even some smaller, like lesser known directors are going to cons that are getting like some recognition. It's cool because other, you know, you're not going to be able to meet these people any other way. So,
But isn't there sort of an inherent greed, you know, $30 for a signature? Or recently it came out that Jamie Lee Curtis canceled going to a con that she was booked at because they were only going to pay her a $10,000 appearance fee. Plus all she got to, her deal was, I want $15,000 and I get to keep all of the income from the $30 signatures. That just comes across to me as straight up greed.
Well, okay.
Those Activia commercials, I guess, aren't paying her as much as she'd like them to.
Yeah.
Only offering her a $10,000 appearance fee. You.
Well, have you now, the way that I look at it is from the whole the truth is in the middle. So I'm sure you're hearing the con side of things, and I'm sure she hasn't said anything about it. So I'm sure that there's probably more to it than just now. I'm not saying that she's not, you know, wanting more money, but there's always a little additional. Oh, well, we forgot that we were doing this. We're taking this percentage off the top or something, or, you know, who knows? You know,
I mean, I don't know.
But then you've got people like Eric Roberts, who honor their deals, even if it's a bad deal. When he made Project Solitude, he told me to my face, if I'd known it was going to be this cold, I would have asked for more money. But he still did his job. Even though he would have liked more money for it, he did his job.
I think there is more to it, though, to the Jamie Lee Curtis thing. Like, I don't think it's entirely her or even her being like, it's what Cecil's saying, that it might be only coming from one side at this point.
Well, but then you've got, you know, speaking of like the cons and the greed in that, you've got like Robert Englund. I realize he was Freddy, but Robert Englund, one of the writers in his contract is he will not appear at a con unless he's the headliner. He won't appear as in the, oh, also Robert Englund or anything. It's, no, this con stars Robert Englund. Everyone else is under me. I just go, fuck you.
You seem to have a hate boner towards all these conventions.
I hate ego. I hate ego. I hate the ego that comes with being a these movie stars and the superstars. I hate the ego of it.
But I mean, in a way, isn't it kind of, aren't we kind of showing an ego by doing a podcast or by doing online shows? I mean, obviously we want people to watch our product.
I'm pretty sure we're all pretty down to earth.
Well, we are.
I was, but now I'm famous.
Right. The Cecil and Peter that I know off mic are the same people that I'm talking to right now. And I don't know if you'd say the same about me or not. But I don't think we go into this with an ego. We go into this as fans, talking to other fans. And there's a reason I don't charge for this. I've seen other podcasts and whatnot that charge you. You know, you need a monthly fee or whatnot. I say no. I'm talking to the fans. It's free. I want to have a conversation with both of you and with you listening. That's why I don't think there's ego involved. So I got to disagree, Peter. I don't think it's the same.
I think there are actors that are definitely fans of just of movies that want to be actors because they love movies and they had their own favorite actors that they looked up to. And they want to kind of give something like that to other viewers and to fans of moviegoers. And they want people to have the same kind of experiences that they had. So some actors definitely have the huge ego trips. I mean, I didn't know that about Robert Englund at all. Like that is scummy in my opinion to be like, I have to be the headliner or whatever. Like that's kind of shitty. I mean, the guy was Freddy and he was, he will be an icon forever, but there are actors that I think are very down to earth and they are just fans like we are. And then they just want people to have, you know, the same kinds of cool experiences that they had growing up watching with their favorite movies. So I think it's kind of a split, and there are a lot of different people in the industry. Some of them are pieces of shit, and some of them are just really cool dudes that are fans of a lot of stuff and that geek out about a lot of stuff. You know, dudes like Henry Rollins and shit like that. So I think it's a little bit of everything to go along.
Some actors know how to deal with it well, and other ones decide to make a weird boy band album.
It's a shame because there are a lot of jerks that continue to make money in the industry and continue to succeed even though they churn out crap. And then you have other people who genuinely went in, they were good actors, they were good actresses or whatever, good directors, and they just caught a string of bad luck and they ended up down on their luck and ended up in a bad place. Some of them were at least smart enough to not do drugs. Other ones got addicted to drugs and ended up like Corey Haim, and it's a shame. It really is a shame. So the whole thing is just, it's just sad when, you know, after they're out of movies and they end up just kind of penniless and living out of their cars. I mean, it's terrible because a lot of times people are still watching their movies and enjoying them, and they have no idea that there's people that still like them.
The ultimate story about that, the guy who wrote Once Bitten, the 1986 Jim Carrey comedy, which is actually funny, I think, even though he says they butchered his script completely, he really didn't work in Hollywood again. He was working at a Blockbuster Video in the 90s, and some lady came up and returned Once Bitten and said, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. Whoever wrote this piece of shit should never be allowed to work again.
Oh, man.
unknowingly saying that to the man who wrote it. Oh. That's where you kind of go, oh.
Yeah, that sucks. That really sucks.
You know what else sucks? Cecil, where can people find you?
Hey.
Hey, I mean suck in the sexual act, not in quality.
I see. In that case, you can find me at escapistmagazine.com. You can find me at kidbadflix.com, Facebook, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, geekjuicemedia.com.
Peter, where can people find you if they want to see you only mildly suck?
You can see me mildly suck on Twitter at Cinematica, YouTube, Cinemasochist, Facebook, The Cinemasochist, and on 1201beyond.com. You can see my popularity just diminishing and spiraling down. Oh, wait, never mind. I'm not popular to begin with.
Popular with me.
Yes.
And me too.
Yay.
You can find me at the aforementioned 1201beyond.com where, you know, I suck. And you can contact me about my suckage at 1201beyond@gmail.com. And remember, guys, just because you're famous now doesn't mean it's never going to stop. Just because your Pixels review went viral doesn't mean you're ever going to have a career doing anything except yelling vulgarities into a webcam.
Oh, Movie stop, Bob.
Stop yelling at Movie Bob.
Movie Bob sucks.
Leave him alone.
Just died. Everybody's hands are in their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody goes. Everybody knows.
Radio Drone is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.